This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad, iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
About a standard orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take us in.
I say.
You will obey. It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends. Welcome to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated show about the original Star Trek series. This is a show where we dive into the characters, concepts, cliches, and other things that don't start with C about the original series. My name is Drew, or Landru. I'm the TOS editor for the network, and with me today is my co-host Mike from Commentary Track Stars.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going really well. I'm better than you are, apparently.
Yeah, I'm a little sick, so I apologize for my voice being even worse than usual. Now I'm super nasally, but also scratchy, so...
Yeah, we're both kind of sound different, but for different reasons. Mine is because I just watched yesteryear, but it's getting a little ahead of myself.
Yeah. Before we get started, I have a tweet here that I would like to read.
Okay.
It says, "Dear DS9, you are the best. Sincerely, Drew."
Who said that? How dare they?
I don't know. So I see that you've seen the light.
Speaking of weeping,
mm-hmm.
I watched all of Deep Space Nine.
Yeah.
And it's really, really good.
It is, right?
Yes.
So when are we just going to make Standard Orbit a DS9 show?
No, they don't go to Standard Orbit enough. Though Wei-Yun said Standard Orbit in one of the last episodes, and I almost went and grabbed the audio to replace Kirk saying Standard Orbit.
Well, I mean, my big question is, when you were on the Orb, how come you guys didn't name that episode Standard Orb It? Missed opportunities. What's the point, guys? What's the point?
Next time.
Next time. All right.
Next time, when you're there too, and it's a full crossover, I'm sure that we'll squeeze that in there.
Okay. Sounds good.
Today we'll be talking about Hal Sutherland, who was the founder of Filmation, and is another C in that he directed the Star Trek cartoon.
Oh, yeah. Hal Sutherland recently passed away, unfortunately, back in January. And although many Star Trek people are probably not familiar with that name, he is a big part of the Star Trek family. He directed 16 episodes of Star Trek the Animated Series, the entire first season, actually.
Which would make him the most prolific director in the original series canon.
Yeah, I guess so, because Mark Daniels did 15 and Joseph Pevney did 14, so technically, yeah, he directed more episodes of the original series than anyone else. Although I guess since his episodes were half the length, maybe that doesn't count.
Maybe not.
Either way, it's very impressive. And he was the founder, the co-founder, along with Norm Prescott and Lou Scheimer, of Filmation, which was an animation company which did a million things, all of the cartoons you know and love from your childhood. And he personally directed many of the shows from that company, including The New Adventures of Superman, the Superman Aquaman Hour of Adventure, Fantastic Voyage, the Batman Superman Hour, Aquaman, Sabrina and the Groovy Ghoulies, Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids, the Brady Kids, and he even did an episode of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe.
Wow.
So yeah, very, very impressive career.
He certainly got around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So quite an impressive career. And, you know, it's one of those things where I know you haven't really seen much of the animated series, right?
Right. I just finished watching my first episode.
That's crazy. How can you, of all people, someone who obsesses over the original series and knows it like the back of your hand, not want to be like, this is the most amazing thing. There is an animated version of this show that I love with all the same voices and all the same writers.
I honestly forget that it exists most of the time. Because everybody's talking nowadays like, you know, ooh, a Star Trek cartoon. I'm like, that would be really, I mean, like, how would that work? No one's ever done anything like that. Oh.
That is so weird. But, you know, like, I watched it. I watched it as a kid and then again as an adult. And one of the things which, you know, every episode ends with this big title card where it says directed by Hal Sutherland. And it's just his name is just like, you know, scrawled across the screen, you know, like I don't know if that's his actual signature or what, but it's just this amazing, like, huge title card, even on the episodes that he didn't direct. So it's kind of like, you know, his name is always, you know, sort of been ingrained and associated to me with that show. Like, he literally signs his name on that show. And it's, you know, we can talk about the animated series, but before we get into that, I mean, let me just say that I don't like the animated series. It's not good. However,
see, that's the kind of stuff that makes me forget about it. Would you rather me watch Deep Space Nine or the animated series?
Okay, but now that you're
we
done,
we made that choice.
Now that you're done with Deep Space Nine, you can move on to the animated series.
Okay.
However, the problem with the animated series was never the direction. And I know people will say that it's low budget and that it looks hokey and that they use the same, like, three frames over and over again for, like, the entire run. And I'm not saying that any of that isn't true, but it is so perfect. Like, the animation style is so clean and just perfect, and it just sort of adds to the tone. And the thing about the animated series, like, I want it to be so much better, and the problem is that the writing, which is shocking considering how much talent was involved with that show, the writing is the big problem with it. And it's the direction which makes me keep on coming back for more. I am constantly amazed by the way that show looks. And when that opening title sequence comes up, I cannot stop watching it because it looks so amazing. It's like two things that I love put together into one awesome thing. It's like Saturday morning cartoons and Star Trek. What would Star Trek look like as a Saturday morning cartoon? And Hal Sutherland, the guy who created all of these Saturday morning cartoons that we know and love, doing Star Trek, it's like it couldn't get any more perfect than that. I love it. And I love Hal Sutherland for that.
I wonder if Mark Cushman will continue and make behind the animated series like a pamphlet. These are the voyages in the animated series.
I know at one point, Five-Year Mission, like, I think they were on Colin's show and they were talking about what were they going to do afterwards. And one of the things they were talking about doing was the animated series. But, yeah. The animated series in general, you know, we haven't talked about that. And this is kind of as good an excuse as any to get into it. Now, you said you've only watched Yesteryear, you know, just the one
right.
episode now, right? And I've watched the entire thing. I was first exposed to it. I was first exposed to it probably in the Star Trek Compendium, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They've got a whole section in there where they talk about everything, all of the episodes from the series and everything like that. And it's like, just seeing the pictures and everything, I thought it was like the coolest thing ever. But, you know, at this point in time, I guess it was out on videotape, but it wasn't available at any of the Blockbusters that I went to or anything like that. So I just kind of had to wait for someone to start airing it on TV. And about a year after I got into Star Trek, sure enough, the Sci-Fi Channel started airing it on Saturday mornings. And I would watch it every Saturday morning, and I thought it was the coolest thing ever, even though it wasn't all that good. And then I remember going to the Laserdisc stores and seeing the big box set where you could get a boxed Laserdisc set, which included all 22 episodes in it in one set. And this was back before they did that. It's back before DVD or anything like that. You know, at that point in time, if you wanted to get the original series on Laserdisc or videotape, you know, videotape, you needed to buy each one individually for $15 a piece. And on Laserdisc, you'd get two on a disc for $30. And it's like, here is 22 things, and just that box with that art, I'm like, I need to have this, you know? But it was like $200. I could never afford that, you know, especially as a kid. And then when all the other series were coming out on DVD, me being, you know, this sort of like obsessive compulsive completist, I'm like, got all the original series, got all Next Generation, DS9, Voyager. There's a big gap here. The animated series. And I'm like, they will never release this on DVD. Never in a million years. So I went on to eBay and I bought the that set. So I finally have that Laserdisc box set.
Wow.
It's amazing. It's the coolest thing ever. It really is.
I mean, that's something I never got into Laserdiscs, but I mean, looking at like LPs versus CDs and stuff, like the art is so big.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at my walls in my house, I've got Laserdiscs, well, Laserdiscs themselves, and then also Laserdisc covers just hanging up everywhere, because it is amazing. I mean, the art is so spectacular on those things. Laserdisc is the best format ever. It just is.
Well, I mean, going back, maybe we should introduce our listeners to the animated series. Like, maybe they don't know that it existed.
Yeah.
In the 70s, it was decided that that they would needed to make an animated series, and they got everybody except for Walter Koenig.
Yeah.
To come back.
Right, but he came in and wrote an episode.
So it's like everybody was involved. DC Fontana, I mean, the writers and the producers. And it's just, it's kind of surreal to hear, you know, DeForest Kelly's voice coming out of a cartoon character.
Yeah. It's great. I mean, when you think about it, it's like William Shatner's doing a cartoon. Well, I guess he does that now. But Leonard Nimoy's doing a cartoon. And then Gene Roddenberry's doing it himself. And DC Fontana, I think, was basically the showrunner on it, if I'm not mistaken. David Gerald is involved. Mark Daniels came in and wrote an episode. It's like they got the whole gang back together. And the results, I mean, there's a Harry Mudd episode. There's a Tribbles episode, which David Gerald himself wrote, which you can find on the season 2 Blu-ray if you want just a little taste. Although you can also get them on Netflix. And it's pretty amazing that they got these things together. And the early reviews coming in, and their intention, I think, behind the scenes was like, this is season 4 and 5, you know? You know, the Star Trek Continues guys and the Star Trek Phase 2 guys, they're not the first ones to be like, we want season 4 and 5. Gene Roddenberry was the first one, and he did it with this animated series, which I always kind of, and I've always thought of this, it's like, these are the last 2 years of the 5-year mission, you know? There's two more seasons, there you go, 5 years, 5-year mission.
A bunch of weird stuff happened.
Yeah. They bring in that orange guy with the third arm.
Because they've got a cartoon, they can do whatever they want. So they replace Chekhov with a three-armed alien.
Mm-hmm.
There's a weird cat lady. Sorry, MRS.
Yeah, there's the winged hawk guy.
Yeah. I mean,
and they did some stuff which obviously you could never do on the original series in terms of the budget. I mean, those characters, for one thing, there's an episode where I don't remember the premise, but I know that it's some sort of water planet, and in order to go under them for whatever reason, Kirk and Spock, I think, grow gills so that they can, you know, go underwater and breathe underwater.
Okay.
There's an episode, one of my favorite episodes actually, is they get captured by these giant slugs. like massive slugs, and they're put into like a prison, and they're trying to figure out what's going on. And what they realize is that they're in a zoo, and these giant slugs are beings which are way more intelligent than they are, and they're like communicating with each other telepathically and stuff like that, and they see you know, humans as like animals. And there's this amazing moment where like Kirk and Spock are looking at this giant slug who's like moving in a weird way or something like that, and Kirk's like, Spock, what are they doing? And Spock says, Captain, I think they're laughing at us. It's the best. It really is. But the animation, it's so good. And I mean, people will look at it and they'll be like, what? That's not good. You know, Tangled is good. It's like, this is so perfect and appropriate and everything for this time period. And I really do love how clean and just simple it is. It's great.
Do you know if it had problems like finding an audience in that it's kind of adult, but kind of not?
You know, I don't really know for sure. I mean, it did. It had a 16-episode first season, and it did get renewed for season two, but season two is only 6 episodes long. So, I guess it wasn't a huge success, but it was successful enough to get a second shot. So, I don't know, really. But it doesn't feel like an adult show, really. You know, it does feel like they're kind of playing to kids. Some of the themes that they're dealing with and everything like that are more adult than your average Saturday morning cartoon. It definitely has some thought behind it. I mean, just the giant slug episode. It's like, that is a very Star Trek thing. And while it seems cheesy to us and everything like that, I can see like a little 7-year-old kid watching this and it really giving them something to think about, because you know, you think of slugs as animals, and then you start thinking about the way that you treat animals or whatever, and now humans are being treated in that way. And I mean, that's a lot of food for thought for a little kid. But is it an adult show? I don't think so, except for Yesteryear, which we can get into now. Now, you watched Yesteryear this morning,
yes,
right?
I've been told from many sources for many years that this, I mean, whether or not it's canon is debated and always will be, just like any kind of cartoon or book is canon is always debated.
Okay, and before we get on into that debate, let me just state for the record that I totally think the animated series is canon. I have no reason to think that it's not canon. It was up on a screen. Was it animated? Sure. Was the Zindi arc animated? You know, I mean, are the Enterprise effects not canon? Because I'm pretty sure they were animated. So where do you draw that line? And I don't. I say you draw the line at it being on the screen, and it's on the screen, and there's things which are referenced in that series in Next Generation, in Enterprise, and I'm pretty sure in the new JJ movies. And definitely,
and in Remastered.
And in Remastered. So, I mean, how much more canon do you want it to be? And why wouldn't it be canon? It's all the same people doing it. I mean, people debate, like, the books, like, oh, well, Jerry Taylor wrote this book, so that's canon, right? And I'd say, yeah, sure, that's canon. And these things were all produced by the same writers as the original series. So yes, the animated series is canon. But for those people who think it's not canon, which I guess is the official stance of CBS right now, even with all that, people are like, no, 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 it's not canon, except for Yesteryear. Yesteryear's canon.
It's always an exception.
Yeah.
But in Yesteryear, Yesteryear has everything going for it. It's written by DC Fontana. It's a sequel to City on the Edge of Forever. Spock is in the Guardian of Forever, and he comes back with Kirk from after visiting Orion, and no one remembers him. So they figure out, I mean, like, and for a show, a Saturday morning cartoon, they figure out that he'd erased his own existence by not being able to travel back in time and save a young version of himself. And so he goes back through the Guardian to save himself. And he meets his parents again. His dad is voiced by Mark Leonard, isn't it?
Yep, yep. I think it is.
His mom is Majel.
Yeah. Pretty much every character that wasn't one of the main characters was voiced. If it was a female character, it was voiced by Majel Barrett. If it was a male character, it was voiced by James Doohan. James Doohan is the voice of Robert April, by the way. Oh, yeah. And Robert April's in the show. So, anyway.
So he travels back in time, and he, interestingly enough, witnesses him, young version of himself, getting bullied by, you know, his dad brought shame to Vulcan culture by marrying a human female, and Spock pushes a kid down. Sound familiar?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you look at yesteryear, there's a ton of stuff that they stole from yesteryear and put in Star Trek 09.
I mean, if anything, that would make it more canon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because technically, I don't see how Spock getting bullied would have anything to do with the Narada coming back out of the wormhole, so...
Right. Right. Definitely.
I wish we had seen his slot in the flashbacks in 2009.
That's true, but you do see a slot in Enterprise, right?
I don't know. I've not gotten there yet. But I think so. I think so.
Yeah, and in the Vulcan arc, the Kir Shara, the Forge, the Awakening, whatever those things are called. Yeah, I'm pretty sure you see some slots. It's animated, so I guess it's still not canon, but whatever.
So young Spock is supposed to do a training of a Vulcan test, where they go out and survive in the wilds, and Spock, eager to prove himself, runs out, and his pet Salat follows him, and Spock follows both of them. Old Spock.
Oh, yeah.
Not old Spock, but...
The Spock we know and love.
The Spock. Prime Spock adult follows Spock. Baby Spock. Adult yeah. Spock.
Right.
But not necessarily old Spock. Because to me, that's a different character.
Yeah.
Spock, young Spock, is attacked by a monster, and his slot saves him, and then Spock saves them both, and then the slot is poisoned, and Spock has to run back and get a healer, and he comes back, and it's too late, and he has to put his animal down, and I cried.
Yeah, yeah. The dog dies in the Saturday morning cartoon, by the way. Spoilers. Spock
has to put him down. Like, I'll be honest. I was sitting there watching it on my laptop this morning, and I'm getting kind of sniffly. And then Jessica's just like, "Don't you have to get ready for your podcast?" And I was like, "I am getting ready for my podcast."
Yeah.
Spock has to put his puppy down.
Picked up Hilo and gave him a big hug.
It's exactly what I did. And he yelped. And it was sad. Because Jessica's like, "Why are you picking him up like that?" It's like, "Because Spock and the baby and the..." I don't like it when animals have to die. But, like, it's not just like, "Oh, the dog had to die." It's like Spock is making the decision whether or not he's going to follow Vulcan or human philosophies.
Yes.
And putting down his animal is the Vulcan thing to do. It's logical. And it makes sense, and he wouldn't have to show emotion, the opposite of what I did.
Yeah.
And so he decides to be Vulcan from that point on, and it's like a big deciding moment in his life.
Right.
Which is weird, because it didn't happen. Spock said that his Salat didn't die. But then when Spock comes back forward in time, he is replacing a Spock whose Salat did die, and who had decided to be purely Vulcan. So I'm wondering how that works.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't really thought of that. He does say that he did have a visitor, right?
Yes, he did. He did save himself, but the Salat didn't die.
Huh.
Which is what is the catalyst of that big change. So I'm wondering what Spock's actual catalyst was. to affect that change, or if he made that decision, and did we replace that one completely when he traveled back forward in time?
So see all those people complaining about how the JJ universe isn't the prime universe and how they changed it. Well, when you were watching those movies, like the original series movies, that wasn't the prime universe either. Oh, well. Yeah, I mean, sometimes if we try to figure out time travel in Star Trek, it kind of all falls apart. But, you know, what can you do?
It is interesting that when they get back to the ship, McCoy starts teasing him about, like, oh, it's time for your physical, and you gotta, you know, gotta recalibrate the machine for Vulcan. And he's like, in the alternate universe where Spock died as a kid, and Andorian was the first officer. And so he says, you know, in another time, you may have been setting it for an Andorian. And McCoy's like, is that some kind of joke? Vulcans don't tell jokes. And Spock says, times change, Doctor. Times change.
Mm-hmm.
Which, to me, maybe that Spock never told a joke. I mean, because Spock joked a little bit in the original series.
That could be. But then McCoy would still know that, right? Because the timeline had changed, so...
But if it was purely Vulcan Spock that this McCoy knew, I think it's a new McCoy. Kirk and Spock are the same as they've always been since the original series, but in the movies, it's a new McCoy.
Okay. So it's not the real McCoy?
Exactly.
Okay. So on the whole, did you like Yesteryear?
I thought it was incredible. And I think it goes to show, I mean, after hearing about all the other episodes, the maybe not so good ones, that it does come down to not necessarily the writer, because writers can have bad days or maybe aren't motivated to turn in a good story. But when it doesn't matter the medium, when someone tells a good story, it's a good story. It doesn't matter if it's animated and it's only running at like 3 frames a second. And Sarek keeps raising his eyebrow because they bothered to animate it that one time and they're going to show it off. It's really good, and I'm going to count it as canon, even if it does mean that McCoy in the movies isn't real.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you could find other instances of that throughout the original series, too. But, yeah, I agree that it is an awesome episode. I think it's one of my favorites. I think it's better than most episodes of the original series. And while I do think that a lot of that has to do with DC Fontana's script, I also think that the style of the animation and just what was set up on the whole with that production has a lot to do with Hal Sutherland. And, you know, he was working with what he had, and given those constraints, he did an excellent job. I will always love that guy, basically solely because of this animated series.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what other goodness can be gleaned from the original series. I mean, no, the animated series. I've gleaned goodness from the original series. I need to glean more from the animated series.
Yeah.
And I think it will be, because we just finished Deep Space Nine, I think it will be, I don't think my wife will watch it with me, but I'll sneak in episodes here and there with the headphones.
Yeah, and they're only 25 minutes long, so you can just, you know, knock out a couple here and there, no problem.
Another interesting fact that I just read about here was that NBC executives in the network was trying to force changes even on the animated series.
Yeah.
Like, so the battle continued. Mark Cushman, where are you? Here they didn't want Spock to have put his animal down, but Gene said, trust Dorothy, she'll handle it.
Yep. And she did.
And she did, as she always did.
Yep. It's amazing. If you haven't seen Yesteryear, you know, if there's probably a lot of people who've seen the animated series and just been like, ugh, whatever. And I'm assuming most people have seen Yesteryear. But if you haven't seen Yesteryear, it is as much original series as anything in the original series. And you've got to check it out because it is amazing.
Well, it's been fun talking about Hal Sutherland and the animated series today, but that's just one of the Trek topics we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Space Seed Commentary.
And in this proposal, it opens up with Kirk and Spock playing chess, and then Spock actually cheats in order to win and gets caught and is a little bit embarrassed.
Earl Grey.
Civilians on TNG.
I'd say that, the Enterprise is lucky to have Mott. He is the heir to the great bullion applesauce fortune.
The Orb.
Raising children on the station.
It has sort of a big city, small town feel. In terms of population and size, it's that small town. But in terms of cultural diversity and the challenges that you face as a parent and the things that your children are exposed to, it has more of that big city feel to it.
The Ready Room.
Remember me.
The computer tells Beverly that there's a flaw in the ship's design as the warp bubble is shrinking. And I'm thinking, damn you, Starfleet engineers, why do you build a ship that's larger than the universe itself?
To the journey!
Season 3 Marathon.
Not that I want to get too detailed here, but I'm wondering if that's all it would take if he mated with a human or if he would just have to use human form. But I just love it when John DeLancey's like, I was good, wasn't I? And then she's like, yeah. Warp 5.
Prequel technology.
You almost feel like photon torpedoes should have happened 50 years after Enterprise, and they should have gone through three different kinds that you'd never heard of. And that seems more real to me.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Future Sport.
He's from the streets, but he has left that life behind, and like he has become like a sellout in a sense. He's about the winning at all costs and not the true essence of Future Sport.
Literary Treks.
Editing Star Trek with Margaret Clark.
I try to make sure that the books are true to their series. That if you're reading a TOS book, it feels like, okay, Bob Justman would have bought this story. He couldn't afford the effect, but Bob Justman would have gone into Gene and went, you really should read this. This is good.
Melodic Treks.
The Klingon Theme.
Goldsmith's Klingon theme established an aggressive tribal atmosphere for the warlike characters. Goldsmith made it clear in an interview that he wrote the whole Klingon music with bad guys in mind.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on the daily Trek talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, or you can stream and download files from the website. Just visit trek.fm/pd for podcast directly to get all the links. And I want to reconfirm to you that this is daily. We have stuff coming out every day. So let me tell you where you can contact us. If you'd like to share your thoughts on the canonicity, the something of the animated series, you can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send a show and choose Standard Orbit. That'll come to me and Mike by email. And you can also use the tab on the right-hand side of any page to send us a voicemail using a webcam's microphone. Or you can talk to us and other listeners on our forums at trek.fm/forums. In social media, you'll find us on Facebook, facebook.com/trekfm, and on Twitter under username trekfm. You can find me personally on Twitter at 005, DOUBLEOFIVE. You can also find me under that username everywhere. I just joined Instagram for some reason, and I bought a PlayStation 3, so I'm also on the PlayStation Network. Like,
awesome.
My Nintendo ID, like, it's pretty much everything.
Cool.
I've worked hard for that. Where can people find you, Mike?
You can find me on Trek FM, where I do commentary Trek Stars with my co-host Max. Right now, we're in the middle of our series on Robert Hewitt Wolfe, looking at his career as an unsung hero. And you can also find me and Max on commentarytrackstars.com, where we do commentary Trek Stars off-topic with our friend Brandon. And you can find me on Twitter at comtrackstars or email me at comtrackstars@gmail.com.
Before we go, we'd also like you to please support our sponsor, who makes it possible for us to bring Standard Orbit and our other shows to you each week. Our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read, but never thought you'd have time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks, with more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers, Audible is something for everyone. There are numerous classic TOS books on Audible, as well as some of the all-time favorites like Prime Directive and Federation. Mike, what's today's choice?
Well, today I found a book on animation. It's called Animation Development from Pitch to Production. It's written by David B. Levy. And the description says, whether a novice curious about the cartoon production process or a visual arts student who has not yet experienced that big break or a seasoned professional looking for valuable insight, animation development is the go-to guide for creating the perfect pitch. So there you go. You want to learn more about the animation biz, see what Hal Sutherland did for a living, check out this book. And you can get it for free Audible.com.
As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice, along with a 30-day trial to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today, catch up on all those classic books you've yet to read, or that latest novel from your favorite author as well, or a self-help book to get your cartoons made. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank you and Audible for supporting Standard Orbit and Trek FM. Also, if you would personally like to support Standard Orbit, the network, and our programming, visit trek.fm/donate. We have 8 alien-themed cartoon badges.
Yep.
It's animated. They're animated. Well, they're not animated.
They're not animated, but they're cartoons.
You can get them as a thank you for your contribution. You can mix and match badges and art prints. There are different levels of donation to choose from, and your contributions help us cover the cost of production, storage, and bandwidth needed to bring Standard Orbit and the other Trek FM shows to you every week. Well, Mike, another one down.
Yep. You going to go off and watch some animated series now?
I think so.
Check out More Trouble, More Tribbles. No, More Tribbles, More Trouble.
Apparently one. Have that on Blu-ray, as you just pointed out.
Yeah. And there's one with Harry Mudd. I forget.
I'll have to check that one out. Harry's my man.
Mm-hmm.
The only reoccurring villain in the original series, oddly enough.
Yep.
Even in the animated series.
Mm-hmm. Good times.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening. Have a good week and keep on trekking. It is the will of Landru.